Come on, guys.
What? Come on. Coming at you. From Banter City.
All the way from Banter City, Tennessee. Hey, guys, welcome.
It was Bantertown.
It's whatever.
It was.
It is Bantertown. Bantertown's
way cool.
Maybe
it's incorporated now, though.
It is
absolutely.
Now.
Yeah,
every episode, I think.
Yeah.
It's exploding. Bantertown has become a city.
Yeah, man.
They got a mayor and everything.
We're growing into a citywide treasure, if you will. A municipal treasure. Hey, guys, welcome to Talk About That. I'm John. I'm here with Johnny and Dane today. The crew's back together. Very excited to have all three of us. It's going to be a lot of fun. And Johnny is joining us today. You can't see this, but Johnny can see this better because he got glasses
for the first time.
I got glasses.
Yeah.
And it's weird. They're really just for driving because when I'm looking at stuff close up, it's blurry now.
Right.
I don't know if that's...
What do you mean
have?
With the glasses it's blurry?
With the glasses now close up stuff because I have a nearsightedness.
Right.
So the far away stuff that I was not reading before, I'm like, holy moly.
Yeah.
I missed a lot of exits. But now they said I'm really not a LASIK candidate because of that.
Mm.
Because if they fix that... Then I'll have like to wear reading glasses to read stuff up close, which is most of what I do is like on the computer. Or,
yeah.
So when I look at my phone right now, it's a little bit blurry. But if I held it 5 feet away from me, clear as a bell.
So are you just going to wear them all the time then?
No, I just have them on today. I'm trying to get used to wearing them.
Gotcha.
I like them.
Yeah, you look great.
Yeah,
suits you.
Thanks. Yeah. The lady at the place, man, she went through like a dozen, you know, pairs in a row trying to figure out like what my face shape. You know, because there were some that you just knew.
Did
right
they
away.
Have names for it, like oblong?
She said I was an oval.
No, she didn't.
And then she said, "And your face is it?" No, she. I guess I'm an oval. I mean, I have a
She said you're an oval face,
but that's like.
That sounds normal, but what, she had a name.
Square
for it,
would be
all.
The bad. Like you've got a real square face. You're SpongeBob. Good luck out there. The glasses aren't going to help. But yeah, it's a process of like figuring out like how much of the lens should cover your face.
Right.
Because if you have really small, if I chose like much smaller lenses, it would make my face look bigger because it'd be like, oh, a giant head with those tiny John Lennon glasses on.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. And I'm getting used to it. So I'm just wearing them now just because
I like it. Where'd you go? Did you go to Warby?
No. I went to, the modern eye gallery, which sounds like you're picking out a new eye.
Yep, it does.
It sounds like something out of a futuristic movie where you go and pick out new eyes.
What was that movie with Tom Cruise where he took the dude's eye out?
Mission Impossible.
No. Minority Report.
Was it the one where...
Risky Business.
So this is what Dane and I do at staff meeting.
Yeah.
And anytime, especially our lead pastor, anytime that he can't think of something... And he's hesitating.
Which is?
It happens a lot. But
Jerry Maguire.
Like, we'll begin just throwing out and many, but usually it's not even related. He would like, you know, guys, I was thinking of that movie the other day.
Jack Reacher.
And you just start naming all the movies. He's like, Saving Arizona. Like, just many random. Charlie Brown.
Saving Arizona?
Wait, Raising Arizona. Saving Silverman.
Private Line.
Raising Arizona.
Saving
Rising Arizona.
You've combined movies on yourself.
Wow.
That's okay.
Yeah, but it's really fun to do. John got me doing it, and it just annoys the crap out of whoever we're doing
it. Because then they really can't think of what they're trying to think of because you're throwing them off so bad.
It's the best.
I read a great tweet yesterday, and it said, the funniest thing ever to do is when someone pays you in cash to say, it's been declined.
I read that the other day, too. It's so good.
Oh, that's great.
I want to start doing that.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I was thinking, Johnny, you know, you're talking about, so the glasses thing, I went to the eye doctor last year, and I was telling him, when I'm in the middle of a long manuscript process, my eyes get strained, you know?
Right.
I was staring at screen for many, many hours. I mean, even when I'm not writing, my other job is staring at a screen a lot. And they were like, well, we can give you these glasses, and that would help. But once you start, it's almost like a drug.
Oh, wow.
Like, once you don't have to have them, but they would help your eyes feel better for long projects. But the more you wear them, the more your eyes will need them.
Okay.
And so I was like, because I would like to do that, but then I'm afraid I'm like training my eyes to need the glasses. And I don't know. It's a.
Your eyes just inevitably need them.
Right, that's the point. You'll make it where you need them more.
No, I'm saying, like, even if you don't use the glasses now and you're trying to train your eyes not to need them, won't, like, in the next 20, 30 years, like, you're going to need eye glasses. Health, John?
Guys, that's what I'm doing. I am working my eyes out every day to get them stronger.
You get what I'm saying, though? Like, you're going to eventually need glasses anyway, so why wouldn't you just go ahead and...
Well, because I would need them more severely quicker.
I suppose.
You know? I don't know if that's...
You know what they say, though? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, which I gotta tell
you... That's not true at all.
Everything in my life, like I thought I had mono one time. Uh-huh. It didn't kill me, and it did not make me stronger.
You know,
I felt awful.
There's a million things.
Yes. But it did make you stronger because you will never get mono.
Well,
again.
I had a fender bender. It didn't kill me.
Everything.
And it made me stronger
Stop
at all.
Stop saying everything. A sweater doesn't kill you, and it doesn't make
doesn't
you stronger.
Doesn't make you stronger. It's a horrible expression.
A fingernail does not kill you. Doesn't make you stronger. A watch... The band Poison.
Dan, can you name one real thing that doesn't kill you yet makes you stronger?
No.
No, it's really...
Even if you
I'm
did...
I'm not for it. I'm just saying.
Like, they've even discovered now, they used to think that breaking
Might
your...
Might not be your best example for what you're talking about.
They used to say breaking your collarbone
right.
was like, well, now it'll never... You've got a bulletproof collarbone, which you've got. That thing, you can't... Lightning can't strike. And then a lot of people broke their collarbones twice and three times. And they're like, you know what? Yes. The science is still out on this. Be careful with your collarbones. But that's what I've always heard is the collarbone is so hard to break. But then when you break it, it's like, it fuses back. It's titanium.
I've never to believe that.
It actually is true, so I hear. It's less likely you'll break it twice.
Tell that to Tony Romo,
yeah,
who I think broke it three
times.
Well,
let's get him on the line. Guys, our special guest today.
You won't believe this.
Is Tony Romo.
Hey, guys.
So, Tony, tell us about this collarbone.
It hurts to breathe, John. It hurts real bad.
Your Tony Romo voice.
It hurts real bad, John. I can't.
Why is that your Tony Romo voice?
Breathing in is hard. Go Cowboys.
Well, that was weird. He's gone, good. But that was, yeah. Man, it was
Tony.
Good to have him.
Man, we really technologically pulled that one off.
Don't you think?
Easily today. Yeah. Man. Like Skyped him in via the spirit or something.
That's a Ouija board. You can't Skype things in. You know what? We could talk about Halloween because it's coming up.
Yeah.
Now, you were raised, John.
Yeah. I was raised, John. You're right.
You were raised, and Dane, too, we were kind of shielded from a lot of Halloween stuff. How did you feel about it? How do you feel about it now, and how are you raising Sadie? John, that's a three-part question.
Wow. Mm. Is this...
Let's start from where how you were raised on it.
Are we going to have a transcript of this later, or
did
is this
you,
a...
I want to know, did you dress up like Bible characters ever?
Oh, absolutely.
What did they call the party?
I can't remember. Now, I know my parents weren't like crazy against everything. Now, we did have the turmoil in the toy box whole thing.
Turmoil in the toy box.
Yeah, we're talking about that time.
Turmoil in the toy box. It was one of those. It was one of those things of like there were certain things I couldn't watch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That if it conjured
right
spells and spirits and things that were
the Smurfs
could
that
be
seems
related.
To be a very common denominator between. Like people, like even in between denominations in Christianity, like every kid that was a Christian was like shielded away from certain toys or TV shows or holidays.
And, you know, and the thing is, it's easy for me to criticize it. I think as a dad, though, there's some things about it as a pastor and a dad. And it's like my kid, we're all Disney. We've been to Disney World like three times, and she watches tons of any of the Disney movies. But I do have these things that make me uncomfortable. Simply because of this, and we're doing two things. I'll answer the third part of the question now in terms of how we raised Sadie. One, it would be that we just talk about it. Like, I'm not going to – the other day, I mean, you know, we're next to some people on the beach. We went to the beach the other day. We're next to these ladies are having this 50th birthday party, and they're from up north. And they were kind of loud every day, and that's fine. It was about seven of them. And by the last day, guys, they made a hole in the sand and just started filling it with beer cans, okay? Like, it was just growing at an exponentially alarming rate.
Yeah.
And so they just got more and more tipsy, and then they're just screaming profanity and everything else. And my daughter was playing with this other girl, and, you know, kids are like – they're like the hall monitors. I mean, she's like, oh, my, can you believe? And they're so offended. You know,
and you were like, Sadie, those ladies watched the Smurfs when they were kids.
Yeah, and that's what
that's what you'll become. It's this conversation. You know, honey, you're going to hear people cussing and people are going to get drunk in your life.
Yeah.
Around, and so I don't want you doing that. And that's great. But you also need to, I'm not going to act like it's not out there.
Right.
I can't shield her. I could have like, la, 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 and put my hands over her ears and ran her away from it. And so, and I know it, you do protect your children, but there's
but you
also.
You don't want to leave your own beer hole that you guys had dug, right, which was 10 feet from theirs.
Right.
Yeah.
As we call it, beer a
hole
beer
would
hole.
Be a great
first, pluck your own beer hole from your eye.
Yeah, then you'll be see clearly
to, yeah,
to remove the beer from their hole. Right.
So it's like it's weird. It's like she was as offended, by the way, at the littering than she was
oh,
at the
sure,
drink.
Yeah.
Sadie was.
Oh yeah,
save the earth.
I actually believe that.
Yeah, you're so upset about the littering.
Is wrong.
I was like, honey, listen, you know, and so, but to that end, like there are certain things, okay, Sadie, like if in a cartoon, if someone gets possessed by a ghost,
yeah,
okay, which in all these Disney Halloween things,
yeah,
I start getting a little uncomfortable because it's beginning to look like something that can be real in the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at that point I go, so look, if you're the White Witch and the Lion, Witch in the Wardrobe,
right,
you know, and there's so many, you know, that's one thing to me. There's no white witch in the Bible, you know what I'm saying? But Jesus casting demons out of people left and right, you know, was a thing.
Yeah.
And so what I want to just always say, hey, if you're going to watch this, let's clarify.
Yeah.
You know, there are real things related to this scripturally, yeah, and we don't mess around with them. They're not for fun. They're not for entertainment.
You've had this conversation with Sadie.
I have. Okay. But I realized by telling her she can't watch it, I might as well be begging her to go do so.
Yeah.
Like then it's a – so what I'm trying to do is there are things we say she can't do, obviously a lot. But you go, you know, who was it? Oh, we were talking the other day, Dane, about, mm-hmm, you know, you and Emily, you and your wife.
Yeah,
you know,
she didn't have those barriers.
Those barriers. And it,
her parents weren't like, you know, gung-ho Christians, and they never – thought that way about TV or like kids programming, so they never gave her those blocks. She could just watch whatever, and I think she turned out fine. So that's what that was my argument to John the other day. Is,
I think she turned out better than you did.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, yeah, definitely.
No, in all seriousness, yeah, I'm all about the end result. I think that's a lot of what we talk about the youth ministry things. Everybody wants to go, oh, that was fine. That was fine. And I go, it was fine. What are the end results?
Mm-hmm.
Did we make better behaved people who don't have confidence in the right things? Or do we make better behaved people who are self righteous because they don't do this thing? Their righteousness is wrapped up what they do or don't do. Or did it make a difference at all?
Yeah.
Other than we had a good experience in those days.
Yeah.
But if you can't point to good things now, then I just, I'm more like the end in mind. So with Sadie, I want to know what the end in mind is. Kid, here's what I tell her. You're going to make every decision for yourself. And you can already make a lot of them now. I'm not going to make this decision for you. Mm-hmm. Some I will have to protect you. But my goal is not to raise a well-behaved child. My goal is to raise a well-adjusted adult. Mm-hmm. That the day that she is ready to, or it's coming. You can act like it's not. You can try to control everything. I will not be in control of her forever. And so what I want her to do is to be able to have the tools to reason, to make the right decision. Instead of just going, shield you from all this so that you'll want to run and figure it out.
Right.
Why don't we figure it out together
right
now in the appropriate manners so that you can make good decisions for yourself. Anyway, that I don't know. That's
like, so instead of teaching like Sadie the Smurfs are bad, maybe teach her that the Smurfs are entertainment purely.
Right.
And Gargamel isn't an actual person.
And I don't want you playing like you're conjuring spells. It's probably not the best game to do. Let's be wise there. But
let me ask you this. Did you let her watch Star Wars?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what's the difference?
What's the difference?
Yeah.
That's the point. When you start dialing it back.
Yeah, where's the line?
There isn't. You won't find it.
Doesn't make sense.
You'll have some arbitrary line based upon. And I do think you should go. There is something to be said. Okay. I believe those who are raised from a certain perspective of Christianity, okay? Certain perspective, I'm not going to name perspectives, but from certain perspectives of Christianity, even
but
as
like
I
the
was
wrong
raised,
ones, right?
They're not wrong. I mean, they're good friends. They're ways that a lot of us were raised that so much of your decision making is based upon internal impression.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do I feel about this?
Yeah.
And I'm not I think internal impressions are a part of the way that God's Spirit leads us. I really believe that. Oh, I have this feeling, I have this. But man, you can also cripple yourself with that because I don't think it's the only way. I don't think that's the only way. Some people will let an internal impression override a scriptural mandate. Mm-hmm. Like the Bible clearly says this. Somebody the other day said that to me. We were in a conversation. I gave him like five scriptures. And they said, I'll pray about this. I'm like, pray about what? Are you going to pray to see if God's scripture is not true?
Right.
Like, what, yeah. You know, to him who knows what is right does not
let's
do
be
it.
Clear. That is only, in most every case, that is only a buffer for more time to think about
exactly.
Something.
Exactly. It's because I don't
want to go and pray about it. It's just a no.
It's a, I'm not going to do what's right. So
mostly it's a no, yeah.
But,
I'm sure.
But when you cite prayer, what is that? That from that traditional, then you, what you're saying is, let me go see if what the Bible says feels right to me.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, sometimes you need to do what doesn't feel right to you.
Yeah, I may mention it before, but when I do events for child sponsorship organizations that I work with, like Compassion or New Missions, like I got into this habit of, because of the way I was raised and just because of my personality, being a peacemaker and being very diplomatic about things, it's almost like I was ashamed to offer this opportunity to a crowd. Like, I'll have this table back here, and if it's something you think you want to do tonight, and I find myself now that I know more about the organization, and I have peace that it's good ground to sow into, that I'm more bold in challenging the audience, that I'll say, this is something you need to do tonight.
Yeah.
This is, I want you to say yes to this tonight.
Yeah.
Because.
To say yes to what?
To
sponsoring a child. Okay. Yeah.
Like, this is $38 a month of your money that is going to literally rescue a person from poverty.
What is there to think about?
Right.
If you have $38.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean,
You know, and when I began to, if you take that exact same logic and you apply it to so much of the church, let's just use the word the church for a second. And you begin to realize that so much of the way I've done church my whole life is based upon me deciding if I feel right about what's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And take, for example, our unwillingness to have direct, honest conversations that build someone up. Because either, like you said, I'm diplomatic, I don't want to offend, I'm afraid of that conflict. Or, you know, two, I feel so hypocritical because I have problems too, and who would I, you know? And when the Bible's so clear about that the gift of God is found, there's such an amazing gift and inheritance that is found in those kinds of relationships that you begin to realize the real question is not what's right. The real question is, I be willing to respond to what's right regardless of how I feel about it? And then the best things in our lives happen when we skip what feels right and we respond. And it's a simple act of, it's a question. It's not a feel your way through.
Well, you can talk yourself out of almost anything if you want to do that. If you want to just go, well, gosh, if I give this guy money, he's just going to spend it on, he's going to waste it on alcohol. Or if I do this, are we enabling people? Shouldn't people, like, it's easy enough to put yourself in their shoes for only the split second that it takes for you to be like, no, they'll blow it. They'll blow this.
Right.
They'll make the wrong choice, and I don't know. I think that we err on the side of, like, when I give money to the church or when I give money to a person, I just feel like it's gone. I don't think like, I better see a return on investment. They better turn their life around.
Right.
I better not see the church doing something stupid.
Right.
You know what? Oh, now we're gonna get a big screen in the, like, I just go, God, this is yours now. Mm-hmm. And then I just play a part. And so, I don't know. It's like, that's kind of, we've gotten a little bit off the beaten path, but I just think that's, we do that a lot, though. We can talk ourselves into doing what we really want to do, or we can talk ourselves out of doing the right thing pretty easily and make ourselves feel spiritually superior while we do it.
Right.
And I think the question of, and there is a question of stewardship to those things. My question would be, I don't really care how big the screen is or how much you spent on it. What are you putting on it?
Yeah,
that's the stewardship for me. Is this a place where the real message of Christ is being expressed yeah. in a clear way, in a non-condemning way, with the right things in the right order. Are people's lives, can we see evidence of Jesus working in people's lives? Then you know what? The money probably doesn't matter as much, you know, if you have the screen or don't. I'm not going to worry about that. But yeah, people will, my point is people will freak out about the mechanism,
yeah.
the building, the whatever. What's happening with the content that those mechanisms and things are housing? That's to me the place you got to look at stewardships. Anyway, no, we are off the beaten path. I don't know. These are good paths, guys. Guys, y'all know the entire podcast is off the beaten path.
So, why didn't we call it that?
Oh, my gosh.
There's already been two better names than what we have.
Man.
I don't know why we just don't change it at this point.
Well, probably because we would never secure as good of a Twitter handle as we have now. So.
Which is what again, guys?
What is that, Dane?
Talk. AB that pod.
What I love about it is the way Dane emphasizes this. You know what I'm saying? He talk about talk. I can't say, you say talk AB that pod.
AB. I say it different every time I try to. Talk AB that pod. At talk AB that pod.
Dane and I.
Talk AB that pod.
Remember the guy, Johnny? Our buddy, I don't say his name, but our buddy used to say he would get up to open a service when we bring us in and he would say, we love you, Jesus. And he would say it like seven different ways.
He would try to get the crowd to repeat it.
Yeah. We love you, Jesus. We love you, Jesus. We yeah. love
That's
you, Jesus.
That's a classic one name.
We love you,
Jesus.
Yeah. We love you, Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dane always loves to point out the emphasis of certain words because he and I go to certain restaurants.
You have a few things that you say really funny. You don't mean to. You just do it.
What do you say, John?
Lemon pepper chicken is one.
Well, when I order at Cheddar's, I say lemon pepper chicken. And for a long time, I ordered lemon pepper chicken every time.
This isn't so quick. I don't know.
You try to say lemon pepper chicken. Like it's, lemon it pepper just chicken. Rolls, man.
You say
it rolls.
Cracker Barrel, John.
In Cracker Barrel.
Remember mine was, remember we did the video and it was about Jason Henry, our friend, who's not a doctor, but we call him Doc Henry. He's actually a physician's assistant. And I said physician's assistant like three times on our video. And we couldn't edit around it, so we just had to leave it in. And me saying, it sounds horrifying.
Say it like real.
Physician's assistant. It's just.
I didn't know that.
Dana Carvey used to do this bit about how during the whole OJ trial, they all ended up saying one thing the same, and it was, you've made an entire mockery of this judicial system. That's what it reminded me of when I said physician's assistant was judicial system.
Physician's cracker
That's
barrel.
Funny.
Yeah. Lemon pepper.
Cracker yeah. barrel.
I'm not, yeah. You even made one of our passwords and had a bunch of numbers with it, too.
Don't say it.
Now everyone's going to know how to hack our Twitter.
No one even knows what site we'd be going to, which one it is.
Lemon pepper.
But it's Johnny's bank account.
Anyway. Yeah. Good luck out there trying to get my bank account.
Yeah, try to steal that, if you will. Let's talk about stealing that.
Mm.
You know, I heard the other day, I told you guys, I just had a book release. And I'm really working to get my buddy Todd on the podcast soon. It's a book that I hope everybody reads. It's called Come and See.
Mm-hmm. Come and See.
Everything you've ever wanted in the one place you never look.
Mm.
Did you write the byline? Did you come up with that?
I don't remember, Johnny.
This seems like something.
Do you like it?
It feels like a John Driver because it's a little wordy.
I thought the same thing.
Guys, you know who else is wordy? Jesus. I don't know. Honestly.
Ever hear the Beatitudes?
No, I don't think I wrote that, actually. Todd Wagner is, he's, you know, and man, that's why I like him so much. He's kind of wordy too, you know, so we get along really well. But it's a cool book. And so the word count was supposed to be like 50 to 60,000 words. That's a common, kind of a standard. That's like a 200-page book.
Right.
And we ended up writing more like 120. To start, then we had to cut it down. And we cut it down to like
60,000.
Yeah,
words?
Down to like 80 something. Which,
oh,
you know,
geez.
And so it
just
reminded
cut out the ands and the v's. It really is hard to make sense of.
I'm at ampersands everywhere.
Guys, we're gonna take the consonants. We believe in this book.
Dude,
it's called.
You sound like Mojo.
It's all vowels.
You sound like a your mojo noise.
Mojo, yeah.
Was Mojo?
Well, Mojo was my Johnny's little dog, old dog who yeah. I used to. He's passed away now, but I used to hold him, and then if I would just squeeze him, or if I would just say the word "squeeze," like I was going to squeeze, he would go every time, like he was preparing. And it was the funniest.
Oh, that's great.
But anyway, back to your
was Mojo the one that couldn't? He literally.
He was like short and fat.
You had to put Mojo in the bathtub.
No, that was BJ. He was a different dog. He okay. BJ was a rescue. He lived with a lady for first 9 years of his life, and she went into a home. So Curry worked at a vet clinic at that time. So she would get these poor dogs who were just dropped off to be put down. If somebody, she was like, "We're gonna foster this dog." I was like, "We're gonna keep." You don't. I don't know if you ever had that situation. Yeah. I mean, if your wife ever says, "Let's foster this dog." You're keeping the dog.
Right.
So he had all these health, like she was a smoker, and so he had this weird.
The
like,
dog
cough.
Was a smoker?
That's why he made those funny noises.
The dog lived with a smoker, but he would wake up every day and he would climb into the bathtub and then look up at the faucet, and you would turn on the faucet and he would drink from the faucet. But yet, after a while, his knee blew out and we had to lift him into the tub because he didn't like drinking from a bowl. So we'd put him in the tub.
You and catered to how he drank
sometimes
water.
Sometimes he would look up at the faucet like, just kill me. Drown me. Drown me today. He was funny, though. Dog, I don't know, man. I'm a dog person, you know, so I'm
intense.
But
you said that wasn't Mojo, though, right?
No, that was a different dog. But he was funny because he wasn't – we didn't know what food to feed him. And, you know, when you get a new dog that's been eating a certain kind of food, they're really picky. And then we went over to my mom's house that first night or two that we had him, and she pulled a carton of Mayfield ice cream out out of the freezer, and the dog started freaking out. And we realized this dog has been fed ice cream a lot. It's a fat dog.
Oh, wow.
And so it was like, oh, now it's food time. Like I recognize that yellow carton. And wow. I'm not proud of it, but we gave him ice cream because he hadn't eaten. And
yeah, I might give my dog ice cream.
I don't know.
Before.
Anyway, he's dead, but. I don't know. Somebody's heart exploding.
But he was happy.
Have we talked about this before? Do you guys give voices to your dogs?
Dane, did you not listen to the last episode?
You guys talked about it. That's right.
We did. Yeah. And
I wish that I was here to do my dog's voices. That's why it came to my mind.
You'll do your dog's voice on the air?
I will definitely do. I am not ashamed. Like
now, you have a dog
that
looks like a little fox. Does he have a very regal?
So Alfred doesn't have like a very distinct voice. I can't do Alfred's. I don't know Alfred's.
I love it like as
but
if
Riley's,
this is true.
Riley's voice is like this. She's pretty dopey sounding. Riley is a pit bull and Labrador mix. She's brown and she's very, very cute and very sweet, but she's very dopey.
So you gave her you gave her a guy's voice.
Well, kind of. Or just like a very deep girl voice.
I don't know how your dog would feel about you like
she seems fine with it.
Presuming
she seems okay with it.
What does she say to you?
I don't know. It usually has to do with food.
What you got there?
She'll come right up to the plate and just stare at it. She won't try for it. She just stares at it.
Have you ever done the voice so long?
It looks pretty good, Dad.
You ever been in the voice so long that like one day my wife, I said something in Brutus's voice and she was like, well, you know, Bertie, she said something about because she corrected it. And I go, honey, he's just a dog. He doesn't know any better. So, like, I've literally now convinced her that I'm speaking.
Yeah,
you know,
I did the same thing with Emily.
How is he supposed to know? He doesn't. Give him a break.
Yeah, I'll do the Riley voice.
Mom, can I have some of your pork chop there?
And Emily be like, no, honey, no. You can't have my pork chop. She'll, like, respond to me saying something for the dog.
You know,
you're great.
I can't help but notice that your dog sounds a lot like Tony Romo. take it or leave it, but
that's funny.
Yeah,
Alfred doesn't have a distinct voice. He just is the worst dog ever. So
he seems like he would have a foppish British voice.
No, he's not British. He's not British.
Come, father.
Why don't you?
I don't got one.
You know, the other day after we had that conversation, I realized that the Brutus voice. I think the reason I do it so much is it's the baby voice I did for Sadie.
Yeah,
it's the voice I did for babies. And when Sadie started talking, I kept going. Because you're losing your baby. You know what I'm saying? Like now, and your baby.
You're dealing with it.
Right. So you
it's
have.
Like it's like a death almost, like you're grieving.
Well, and a lot of people, you know, Laura and I talk about that a lot. A lot of people really, when you, there are a lot of moms out there, especially that, man, they just, oh, I just miss my babies. I miss my babies, you know. And I kind of have some, we have some of that. Like, I really love, I love babies. I do. We both love babies. But there's also something about having a 9-year old, you know, like she just made the volleyball team this mm-hmm. week.
A lot of babies will not make volleyball.
They
teams.
Won't. I used to throw the volleyball right at her face, and she couldn't even return it. And I was like, right? "How many times do I have to
they
do this?"
Won't learn
before, but you know, no. There's these. There's the joy of other things. But I realized it was just a continuation. I think trying to keep the. I don't know. Maybe it was.
It's like a control thing too. Like that's one of the reasons people don't want their kids to grow up. I think because it's like you settle into a pattern of. Well, I chose everything. I choose what we're going to eat today. I choose what we're going to...
I chose what you were saying because I was doing your voice for
right.
you.
Right. I choose what you're going to wear. I choose, you know, when they get their own opinions and attitudes and sometimes bad attitudes, you're like, where did this come from? Right. You're not my baby.
I know.
Where's my baby?
Well, so the book. I heard the other day, I said that to talk about long books. I heard the other day Garth Brooks... is releasing a book, and then I
autobiography.
Heard an autobiography. And then I heard that it's not just a book; he's releasing his autobiography in 5 books.
Five. And are they coming out all together? I read this, but are they coming out together at
once?
I
don't know.
Or is it like, man, that's a cliffhanger? I wonder what happens next.
It just seems a little self-indulgent.
It seems five times self-indulgent.
Yes.
Like a book about yourself is like, well, he's had a good career. Write a book. We can't tell this in one book. Great story like this. Jeez. It's like the Iliad and the Odyssey.
How long are the books?
I don't know.
What if they were all little and he just was like, 40 pages each?
Yeah. Well, you know, I wrote a long book one time called No Arrivals. It was kind of a big thing for me, you know, probably 5 to 7 years ago. And I had this agent, and this agent said, look, well, you just got to get this out, man. You just got to get this out. All this stuff in your heart, just get it out. So I was like, fine. So I just threw out word count, everything. I just wanted to write from my heart. And when I wrote, it was 130,000 words, okay?
It's too much.
It was everything.
Too much was
in my heart, yeah. And so I brought it to him like, oh, you know, you wanted me to give you my heart. And he dropped me the next week. He literally ended our agreement. I can't do anything with this. So that broke my heart. But then ended up, there was this small Christian publisher that I ended up having this relationship with. And they offered me, they wanted the book. Mm-hmm. And they offered me a 3-book deal out of that one book. And I had signed with my other agent by the time this offer came. And it was not a lucrative offer, I'll put it that way. So it wasn't going to be the best financial move, you know. But I was excited. And they're still friends and appreciate them. But... they wanted to take the content and do what you're saying. They wanted to release No Arrivals as 3 books at once.
Right.
And my agent was just like, it's just the weird, that kind of, not self-indulgent, but what are you telling the reader? Right. Like, I can't get this in
Maybe
one
that's
book.
What happened to Garth. Maybe he submitted like really long word count.
And they were like, this, we can't lose a word of this. It's just gold.
Right.
See, unlike Garth, though, I didn't have the kind of pull. Right. Like when my agent said, hey, no, you probably shouldn't do this.
I hope one of the books is just about the Chris Gaines thing.
Well, I don't do you
know
anything
Chris
about
Gaines? No, Chris Gaines. Oh, dang. You know, he went, Johnny, you tell it. Sorry.
Early,
this is
late
your,
90s. It's been late 90s.
The year was 1998. I don't know what year.
It was probably 98.
That was a good year.
So 98, gosh. Garth Brooks did a movie. He did a movie and he was playing like a pop star.
Okay.
In the movie.
Garth.
He was dabbling in acting. It was a made-for-TV thing.
Okay.
And it was about this character called Chris Gaines. Mm. So rather than just be like, well, this is a movie I want to do and blah, 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 he started doing performances and appearances and released a record as Chris Gaines.
Like a pop.
Weird.
And it looked like Garth, that he had spiky hair and like a soul patch.
Yeah. Weren't the song? He had some good songs on there,
didn't he? The only one I remember that went on the radio was, it was a cover of Come On, People Now, Smile On Your Brother. What's that one called? Love Train. Come on, people now.
Smile on your brother.
Everybody get together.
I can't imagine.
Love one another right now.
That's beautiful. I can't imagine Garth Brooks without a cowboy hat on. I can't imagine him with hair.
Okay, here's what he did, though. This was the thing that he did that was, to me, like, it captured the moment, and the moment died shortly thereafter. He hosted SNL.
Oh.
As Chris Garth Gaines. Brooks.
Oh, wait, yeah, yeah.
And Chris Gaines was the musical guest. So Garth Brooks was.
Didn't he have like a big, like emo swoopy hair thing in his
emo
face?
Emo swoop was full on, but it was kind of spiky too.
Was it like spiked in the back?
And it wasn't a country record, by the way. It was like a pop record. So
yeah, that's what
I don't know what happened that he was like. But I mean, it's interesting because we tell artists not to make the same record 10 times in a row. We get mad when they just go to living blah. But then if they take a risk, we're like, what is wrong with you? So it's like we really can't be pleased.
Right.
Like I read this quote, great quote from Henry Ford, you know, who invented the automobile or one of the first automobiles. And he said, if I'd asked people what they wanted,
yeah,
they would have asked for faster horses.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So there's something to like taking a creative risk. So I'm not just trying to slam the guy, but. It was a weird thing. It was a weird thing to do.
Every innovation is somebody's creative risk, and there's so many innovators you'll never know about. There's so many great things.
I would read that book before I would read, because I would want to read about somebody taking a risk and failing that we know only as, that has 50 number ones and right. sells out arenas. I would want to hear about this, what happened behind the scenes. So that's the book I would read for real.
Right.
If he talks about that.
Does he talk about the things that got him there?
I don't know.
Absolutely.
Garth, if you're listening...
you can follow us. Send us a direct message.
A sixth book is in your future, pal. Maybe it's great, though. Maybe it'll be the best.
Maybe.
Well, he does.
It sounds like something for fans of his, though. Like, if you're a fan of Garth, you
might. Who else is going to buy a Garth Brooks autobiography? Of course. I don't know. I wouldn't.
You know what I like? I finished Stephen Curtis Chapman's autobiography this year. You know, of course, they lost.
I've heard that is just...
Yeah,
heart-wrenching.
With his daughter's death and everything, you know. But he follows his whole career. You know, like he was a George Jones impersonator at Opryland. He was an Opryland musician in the theme park.
I didn't know
it's
that.
It's crazy. And I love it because I followed him for years and love his heart and what they do with adoption and everything. And but one of the things he said a couple times in the book that I think he really believes, you don't just add this, and I work with people who do autobiographies. And so I always enjoy working with someone or reading someone when they say, I'm still surprised that anyone will want to read about my life.
Yeah.
Like, you should have, I think you should have that.
You should talk to Garth.
Right. Well, maybe Garth is. Maybe his life really is. And maybe not. And we don't know the whole story.
Probably not.
And us going to the millions of people listening around the world, this could be impacting the market for Garth. And I hope that it doesn't because.
I'm sorry, Garth.
But he needs to come on and tell his real story and tell us what's going on.
He's down to his last billion. He doesn't get people to buy his book.
His jet's like 5 years old now.
Yeah. Oh. Oh my God.
Yeah. You know, you go back to our earlier conversations, you know, you were asking about what do we teach our kids and you know, I'll ask you guys a question today, and this is not about Garth or those things, so I'm officially now making a little bit of a transition into something else.
Oh, okay.
But it does go back to where we started. Like, if you were to ask in terms of when I think about my kid or I think about us trying to train her in faith or we talked about the church a little bit today, what do you think the greatest danger, I want to give you two options, the greatest danger to faith or to someone's growth in faith is today between these two things? Do you think that it's a greater danger of worldliness or a greater danger of legalism? Like... But as you think of those things, I was certainly not necessarily just by my parents. My dad was kind of a hippie Christian in some ways. My dad was.
Don't believe that.
No, he was. Dad was very in the conservative spectrum. I would consider him to be very progressive.
Yeah.
Compared to his contemporaries and peers. You know, he's the one, Dad wanted everyone to read the Bible in a language they can understand. That was a real big deal for Dad. So back in the 70s, Dad got the Living Bible. That was a paraphrased version. We talked about that before. And man, everybody got Living Bibles. He sent Bibles. And then, he's always, but anyone around him who didn't like that, he made them uncomfortable. You know, that was Dad's thing. And so I never felt like we weren't really raised just uber, legalistic, if you want to use that. It wasn't just rules for rules' sake. We would talk about it. But I think certainly from the church, though, or from the artists or whomever you listen to, Christianity for me was very much about avoiding being like the world. Like, don't be like the world. Worldliness is the greatest of all dangers. And I just want to see how you guys feel as we talk about that. Is worldliness, is becoming like the world still the greatest of all danger, or is there a danger to legalism and defining maybe those two things for our listeners, you know, what we mean by those? How would you guys, Johnny, how would you feel about legalism versus worldliness?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up for sure with a lot of rules. Some of them I understood, some of them I didn't. I can look back now and see, like, okay, well, there's some things, like boundaries are important to a degree. I mean, there's things in the Bible that God says don't do, or God says these. But I think of it now more when I'm reading the Bible, it's like, well, this is like a parent telling his kid not to play in traffic, and the kid doesn't understand.
Right.
You know, and you're like, why? It looks so fun. You know, so sometimes it's like, well, if somebody just wants to go out and be involved in outrageous sin, that's not freedom. So you're not saying, like, so these people that are, there's kind of a new wave of people who are pushing back against legalism. The pendulum is swung the other way, and they're just like, well, I'm just going to do whatever I want.
Right.
And this is freedom. And then, like, okay, well, I'm not going to tell you you can't drink alcohol, but then if somebody has an alcohol dependency issue, you're like, man, would they have been better off with just staying away from it altogether? So yeah, there's that. We live in the balance of those two things for sure, because I think we all believe in boundaries to some degree, or we wouldn't be involved with the church anyway, because you're just like, we obviously believe that God has things that he prefers, that, you know, God's holy. He doesn't want you to do things. But yeah, I grew up with rules that were like, we don't want to be like the world. And it did create a sense of me, a sense in me of when I saw people that did do those things, like listen to secular music or go to R-rated movies or whatever, I would not just go, that person, I'm worried about them. I would feel immediately superior to them. That wasn't anything that, like, my mom said, and you're better.
Right. It was just the fruit of that thinking.
The fruit of that thinking. And so, but having said that, I think that there are some things in entertainment now that Christians are okay with, myself included, that I go, is that the right thing either? Like, this whole thing, well, it's just whatever, and it's just a show. Like, obviously, we can prove that Hollywood has moved the needle as far as what's accepted in our culture. Even some shows when I watch, I'm sometimes not as bothered by saying, oh, this was ultra-violent, or this was whatever, ultra-sexual or whatever. Sometimes I'm more bothered when I see, like, a show with no redeeming characters whatsoever, and the show's just kind of, like, glorying in a group of, and there's never any comeuppance.
Miscreants.
Any comeuppance for wrong choices. Like, even if you watch Breaking Bad, he's kind of the original, like, anti-hero of the last 10 years on TV. One of the best shows ever, probably. And here you are, like, conflicted because this guy's making meth because his family's going to be without money if he dies of cancer. But then even people who are, like, super legalistic and are like, that show is going to, even you, if you watch it, it does not glorify that lifestyle at all. And he totally gets, he pays for his sins in more than one way. And it destroys people around him. And
No spoilers, Johnny.
Yeah. I'm sorry if you've never watched Breaking Bad. But so there's something to be said for that. But I'm saying, yes, I'm in the balance of those two things, where I still have some of that stuff where I'm trying to unlearn legalism, but I'm also saying, if we tear everything away, if we throw the baby out with the bathwater and we have no boundaries and we say, well, whatever people want to do, it's just entertainment, we're not, it's like a cognitive dissonance. Like, the people in Hollywood who are now out for gun control and, like, let's take away everybody's guns, but every movie that they're known for, they're holding a gun and killing people indiscriminately. You go, you don't understand. You don't see a weird.
Right. At least irony. Like,
yeah.
Something
it's
there.
It's just a little different. Yeah. That's just a show. And you're like, okay, I don't know.
Yeah. No. And I think you're right. I always say, don't throw baby Jesus out with the bathwater, you know, because there's this, I think children bring a great perspective. Like, okay, what is my purpose? Is it for Sadie to be a rule follower?
Yeah.
I was a rule follower. I thought, throw all the idea about it. Well, was I trying to earn my righteousness? All those things. Those are all the implications of that. But we're kind of focusing on the end game of that. And so we were growing up, you take the alcohol thing, for example. When we were growing up, we were told alcohol touches your tongue.
Yeah.
It's hellfire for you. You know, it was we're in the South. In our religious traditions, it was very, and I wasn't told that by my parents like that. We had honest conversations about it. But it was very much like, we don't do this, mm-hmm. you know. And yes, so you see some dude in Pizza Hut with his family having one beer, and since you're a kid, you have no sphere of reference to know. You're just like, oh my gosh, I hope that guy doesn't drive, you know, thinking that there's no, like, right. you don't know what amounts or, you know, and then, you know, to that end, everybody that I knew of in our youth ministry growing up, everybody who was taught like that all went out either in secret as teenagers and certainly in their college years and just got smashed all the time.
Yeah.
Because the fruit of it was we became, and this is something in the Come and See book that really impacted me. It's easy, something that you would think, okay, well, this hurts people, so let's make a rule about it. And I think that I would say, and alcohol is just one example, and if you're a listener today, I beg of you, don't freak out about the alcohol example. Take this for everything. What we say in the book, what Todd says in the book that's so good, is when we are dogmatic about something the Bible's not dogmatic about, mm-hmm. or the flip side, we are dismissive about something the Bible's not dismissive about, that's a great way to find whatever that middle is we're talking about. It goes back to those feelings. Am I just going to watch this show? And I think it's okay. You should be feeling something. How does this feel to me? You know, Paul talks about that, the law of the conscience. When it's not explicitly stated in Scripture, then you need to follow those internal nudges and those things. That's good. You should be listening for that. Is this pleasing to God? Is this more pleasing to God? Not necessarily in a matter of salvation, all those things, but I think that you should be following that. That's good. But if what I'm doing in my life is so clearly not dismissed by Scripture and I'm dismissive of it, then there should be a check there. Or if what I'm dogmatic about or against, the Bible's not that much, like right. I'm making a greater case than the Bible does for it, then right. what does that say? And that balance there, like I have no problem being bold anymore to just say, my opinion really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We're a culture that says, well, what's your opinion on this? It really doesn't matter what my opinion is. It doesn't. My opinion's not changing truth. So what I want to say is, can I, and sometimes you can't necessarily ascertain definitively in this day and age God's full opinion on something because the Scriptures don't reveal everything about social media or about modern things. It doesn't, you know, but what I can say is what's lacking there.
Yeah.
I don't want to be dogmatic where the Bible was, and I don't want to go overboard and I don't want to go underboard. Can I do my best to find a middle ground? I don't want to pick one Scripture out. Okay. And like just hammer it and twist it and use it to make an entire religion out of it. That's not right either. What does the whole context of the matter seem to lean towards? And then I listen to people who are even not like me. So if someone says, hey, listen, here's a scriptural argument maybe you haven't heard, then that's valid to me. Let's hear it. And if it goes against what I feel or what I think or what I believe about it as my opinion, great. That's called sharpening. Let's hear that. Maybe that will help shift me another degree in a direction I need to go because I think I've stopped believing that my opinion must be the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to me, I've looked at things like, as I reassess things and try to go like, well, how much of this can I keep from my upbringing and how much of this should I, you know, just separate the wheat from the chaff? And you go, okay. So what I do now is I say, does this belief of mine make me more likely to dismiss a person or to reach out to a person? And so that self-righteousness that I used to feel before made me more likely to just be like, well, I can put this person in that pot and they're in that box over there and man, they're gone. But it's like a real belief that comes from, a place of truth, it should draw you in, it should draw you into community. So in other words, like I think I was raised to believe that like drugs were bad and people that were addicted to drugs
stigma
were bad
was
people
huge,
because
yeah.
drugs were bad. People that did drugs were bad. And now I believe that drugs are dangerous and that people that are addicted to drugs are sick.
Yeah.
So it's just that one shift.
And then someone would say, well, yeah, but they made bad choices. And they'll go back to something we said in an earlier episode. Like, for some reason, we act like someone's bad choices disqualifies them from our need to show them grace, which by definition, like the more bad – it doesn't mean that we don't acknowledge your bad choices. So it's like we have all or nothing. Either we have to say it's your fault, you're responsible for this, you made the stupid choice, therefore no grace for you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how we treat them. We would never say that. That's how we treat them. Or or just come on, doesn't matter what you do, we have grace for you. That's not grace either.
Yeah.
Like real love would say, hey, man, I love you enough to tell you that you're severely hurting yourself and I can see clearly why, because I've done that in my own version of life. How can I serve you well enough that we can live this out together where we see a transformation in you? Well, I'm not just throwing a scripture at you and walking away, and neither am I justifying what you're doing because all things are okay. Hey, all things aren't okay. And the fruit of that, the evidence of that, you're living out right now. You're, you know, but there's no condemnation in that. Come, let's do this together. And see that middle ground of I'll go, so let's be honest. I told you all the story of Joe, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Did I? The guy who called the day and he was suicidal.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Different Joe.
Different Joe. So I'm my own Joe. That was John Kerry's Joe story. Yes. And we'll kind of be our last story for today. This guy calls the office one day. Okay. And this was a real moment for me. And one of our staff who'd answered the phone runs up and she said, oh my gosh, there's a guy on the phone who's suicidal and wants to talk to the pastor. So I've gotten calls like this before. So I go and I take the call. Joe is like in his 50s. He lives in his car, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he's in Nashville somewhere. And Joe had just had enough. He says, I want to jump off a bridge. And obviously he's calling, so I know he's reaching out for help. So, Joe, tell me what's going on. Well, I live in my car, made a lot of bad mistakes in my life, and I had just gotten a new job. And they were paying me good money. I was going to start working my way up. So in my car, though, I'm piecing this all together.
Yeah.
In his car is all of his worldly possessions. They may be few, but they're everything this guy has, his pictures of his family, everything. Well, he's parking near his new job, and he's getting up and going to work. Okay. Well, one night a cop tows his car because his tags were expired. Uh-huh. Okay. He goes to the impound lot. I'm sorry. A cop pulls him over. He's driving. Tags are not expired. His license is expired.
Okay.
He arrests him.
Yikes.
He arrests him. Impounds his car. The judge looks at him and lets him off like, well, look, pay the fine. You know.
Yeah.
He goes to get his car out. It's $300 to get his car out.
Right.
He can't get his car out. He doesn't have the money. Like he had. If you could hear in Joe's voice, it was like this. I was so close. I was breaking the cycle. I had the job finally.
Yeah.
Someone, you know how hard it is to get a job without an address?
Sure.
I mean, it's almost impossible. You have no address. You have no, and someone had given him a chance and he was working hard. He was showing up and he made a mistake. His license is expired. He gets pulled over and it was almost like they were picking on him is how he felt.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure the guy probably had outstanding whatevers. I don't know. I'm not blaming the policeman for that, but the consequence to him and his mind felt so severe. Now, the judge seemed to get it and let him off the hook, but these fees, he goes to the impound lot and they won't give him his car.
Right.
And he can't get to work. And so the sequence, the cycle is like, I will never get out of this.
Yeah.
They've taken all my possessions and they won't let me have my car. I begged them. I told them I'll come over and sweep and work. And can you give me a job to do? I'll mow the grass. I'll whatever. Like he's offering and the guy won't do it. And every time, every week it stays there, they add a fee. Mm, so he's just growing and he's done. Like that dude's $300 is done. Now, as a pastor, as forget that. As a believer, like I got to get real. So the story, I'm going to tell you the story, and then I'll tell you why it was real. Like, first off, I don't want the guy to commit suicide. Isn't that like, and I'm asking him all the questions you ask. Do you have a plan? Do you know something? You know, and he's serious about it.
Yeah.
We talk, I share hope with him. I share the gospel with him. We actually pray on the phone and have this great moment. But at the end of the day, the dude needs his car.
Yeah.
And so in that moment, and I'm not, I said, give me the number to the impound lot. I call the guy and I begin reasoning with him. I'm like, man, listen, this dude, and I tell him the story. And he's like, well, look, you know, I told him, and I care about that stuff, but you know, that guy's got a job to do. And I talked to him about 20 minutes, and I finally go, all right, here's my credit card number. I want to get Joe's car out. Joe needs his car.
Yeah.
You know, and I paid his debt, okay? Then I call him, and I tell him what I've done. And he freaks out. Joe's like, I can't believe he did that. And I said, Joe, the God's honest truth is, I didn't really do anything for you except what was done for me. Like, that's exactly, this sounds like a John Driver telling his own story. This was great. No, the ending you understand. Joe, I promise you, I'm just passing along the same grace that was given to me. Somebody paid my debt, and this is nothing.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to pay your debt. And I said, Joe, and at that point, I knew this is where it gets weird. And he was so grateful. Oh, dude, can I come work at the church and do something and take out the trash? I said, Joe, no, I don't need you to earn it. Just let me love you and bless you. And hopefully this job's going to work out. And so he didn't live in Mount Juliet. He lived kind of around. But I said, Joe, you know, I'd love, and this is where it gets weird. Joe, you don't just need, though, a prayer. You need a community of people. That's what we all need. And I would love for you to come be my guest this Sunday with our community of people anytime. You don't have to, but anytime you want to show up, man, you be my special guest. He's like, yeah, I'll be there. And I hung up the phone, and this is the truth. In my mind, I thought, what the heck are we going to do with Joe if he comes in?
Yeah.
Homeless.
Right.
Dirty clothes, smelling.
Yeah.
Am I going to take him to lunch today with me and my, I don't know. Joe could be a predator for all I know. I really don't know Joe.
Right.
I know that he had a hard story and I helped him out. He could have been scamming me for all I know and I just gave $300 away or whatever. But yeah. At the end of the day, that's when I began to look at the matter of the church. Be in the church, and I realized we're not ready for Joe. We're not ready for this. Our religion is very insulated. We don't really know. There is no way we won't look at him differently than we look at Dane walking in the door. There's no way that he will get spoke. It's not because we're bad people. It's because we're not experiencing the fullness of what all this is supposed to be in that real way. And it was a real convicting moment for me. It was a moment where I realized, you know what, God, I need to start getting ready for Joe and not look at Joe as back to your conversation about the drug addict or the homeless person or whomever. He's just a dude.
Yeah.
And so am I. And just because whatever my status is or whatever my religious experience is, you know, whatever it may be, I'm in no less need of help. Like imminent help than Joe is. And the more I believe that, when we stop as Christians believing that we need grace, I call it equal opportunity offenders. We should be equal opportunity offenders. If the gospel is more offensive to someone else because it calls us to change and by offended even by grace, if I'm offended that you tell me, you need grace as much as someone else who is a drug addict or someone who did this or that, if I think I need less, then I'm not getting it. It's not radical enough. Then I'm playing into a works-based mindset that says it's about how good I am and there's levels of goodness. Mm. No, that's heresy. That's heresy. But that's what so many of us in the American church believe. We really believe, we would say one thing, I believe that we all need grace the same, but when you had to sit down next to Joe or you had to sit down next to a drug addict or sit down next to someone who's an inmate who made horrible decisions, you would never equate. I'm not telling you your decisions and their decisions, all sins are the same. No, I'm not saying that. But the fact that we really don't believe I'm in the equal need of the grace of Christ as that guy, it began to prove to me the Pharisee inside. Like it pointed out the Pharisee. It's easier to give Joe $300 than it is to live in community with him. That's just the God's honest truth.
Yeah.
And that's the recovery program. That's the rehab I'm in. That's the rehab I'm in. I have to rehab from that mindset because it's wrong. So anyway, that's my Joe story. Sorry it took so long.
That's crazy. That's good, Dad.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a good reminder. I think it's true. Like when we imagine a church growing, we imagine middle class, well adjusted families with 2.3 kids and all the, you know what I'm saying? We imagine the great American family and their man, if we get these. And then if you're not careful, because, I mean, I worked here, you know, and we didn't really have this attitude. But when you're not careful, you start your events become about that. Like, okay, we do this event,
yep.
Spend this money on an event. Maybe we get some new families. You start seeing people as tithing units and all this other nonsense. It creeps into your mindset.
Yeah.
Like, we got to keep the lights on. We got to. It's like when really, like, what a true community would look like is a lot messier than that. It'd be. There'd be a lot of like hard meetings being had because such and such, you know, because Joe did come and he made somebody feel uncomfortable, or maybe he had a history, maybe he had wronged somebody, you know.
Well, some churches are going to talk to Joe about the stuff about him that make us uncomfortable. What I want to be talking about is I want to talk to us about the reason we're uncomfortable around him, you know,
right.
As equally as much. You remember Hunter? I told you Hunter's story, the kids make a messy home.
Yeah.
You know, a messy church is the right. Is the right church? I mean, there should be. I mean, if I'm in a church where everybody always seems to fit right. into this.
It's like a museum.
Yeah.
Like I always think it's funny when I go on and looking for an address for a church, and the address will pop up on like Google, but it'll say closed now. And that's just part of like churches hours that they have to list or whatever.
That's good.
The idea of a church having hours,
right.
yeah,
is. Kind of fascinating, and maybe it's not what they mean by that, but
it's their office hours.
Yeah, go, man, what an interesting thing of like, yeah, we just have the museum is closed.
Yeah.
Come back when you can see the perfect porcelain people on right. Sundays when we have our masks on. It's like, it shouldn't be that. It should be a lot more, it should be up close and real and blood and guts and, you know.
Well, earlier today we were shooting a series of videos at church right now. We call them Stories of Transformation, and it's going to be a great one Sunday. It's the wife of my good friend who's a drug addict. She's telling her side of the story.
Yeah.
We got to walk, lots of people did, through, and they're still in that journey. And realizing that dude has become such a great friend to me and someone that I respect so much who speaks in my life when I dismissed him because he was a drug addict for so long.
Yeah.
I looked down on him. I did. And
when you missed out, on what he really had to bring.
And it didn't help him or me,
yeah.
by the way. It didn't, you know, you know how much it would have helped him to be able to help me? How much it would have helped him to not have to rely? A great gift from the Lord is to be able to realize that God's asking me
right.
to be a part of your life as well. There's accountability, responsibility, and a desire to help because he's one of the most helpful people you ever met.
Yeah.
But who wants to receive it? Because that's okay. I'm good, bro. Come back whenever when you're better than a drug addict.
Yeah.
And that, like, who in the world do I think I am? That's just, I don't know, man. It's been great.
It's good, though.
It's been great. Well, man, that's a good conversation today. A great time. Hey, you know, I did, by the way, I want to just share one of our customer reviews they call it customer reviews, but it's on iTunes. Reviews. That's what it says. I didn't call it that.
You didn't pay
or ratings.
Yeah,
solid intellectual conversation with plenty of humor. It's great to see Christians not be afraid to actually be honest and tackle topics that would otherwise typically be taboo.
Oh.
So that's Guitar Freak 846.
He clearly listened to the wrong podcast.
Yeah, that's,
I don't know.
You've clicked a different podcast.
His title is Best Hour of My Day.
Oh,
guys,
look at that.
That's Andrew Gomez.
Yeah. Well, I'm supposed to say who it is. Act like it's a stranger.
Say who it is. We all know.
It looks like
is.
We're getting our mommies and stuff to come on here. And
it is our mommies listening to this show.
Mommy.
Bro. Gomez is not my mommy, but
I'm going to say this.
Weird.
Whoever submits another review, the best review between now and next week, we're going to read it on the air. And you know what? We're going to send them a Johnny W. Comedy DVD. And a copy of my new book, Come and See. Yeah. Shipping and handling may apply. So yes, do it and we'll send you something. We're going to send you something. Read the best review. We're going to send it out.
Rate it. Review it. Do it. We believe in you.
That's a good slogan. Mm-hmm. Rate it, review it, do it.
Do it.
Wow. Go to rateitreviewitdoit.com.
AB.
That pod. Hey, man, you guys have a great week. Look forward to seeing you next week on Talk About That.
Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. Give thanks in all circumstances. God invites us to cultivate thankful hearts by turning our eyes toward Him in good times and bad. To listen to more Abide Christian Meditations, just go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Christian Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.